Welcome back to Bull Droppings. I'm Josh McSwain here with my co-host AJ Torres. Today, we got some news coming out of Texans camp. We got Bradley Roby being sent to New Orleans. We've got Danny Amendola coming in right before the season. And of course, we are going to talk about the season opener as the Jags will be here in just a few days. And still a lot of questions left to be answered, but one question that was answered was who the starter would be, and I remember a few weeks ago on this show, I thought Mills would be starting. Obviously, that didn't happen. I wanted to make a case for the fact that the rookie should start, at least see what he's got, and sure, I acknowledge he threw a lot of interceptions in the preseason, and he may not quite be there yet. But I'm really not sure what Tyrod Taylor offers as a starting quarterback. I feel like Taylor is really a guy you'd like to have as a good backup. And, you know, he's obviously done well for himself over his career. He's lasted a long time. He has a Super Bowl ring from Baltimore in 2012. And ironically, he is now starting while Flacco is languishing on the bench in Philadelphia. But the point of all this is, I still feel like Mills is going to start eventually. Maybe after Thanksgiving, the coaching staff will let him start the rest of the year. Because in the end, Taylor looks to be one of those guys that's sort of at the twilight of his career. He may not be the reason you lose any game, but he's also probably not going to be the reason you win a lot either. So, with all that in mind, let's go ahead and let's go on to the new moves, unless you want to add a word on Taylor being named the starter.
Yes, and that is, if you take out Lawrence, Wilson, and Jones, here's the thing. Trevor Lawrence did have to win the job, but he was also the first overall pick.
Yep.
Zach Wilson, you're the second overall pick, and there was no quarterback that you had any trust in mind. There was no mentor, no nothing. So I get it. And Mac Jones, as far as I'm concerned, right, if Cam Newton didn't slip up and get released, and basically Bill Belichick, who calls the shots at New England, if he doesn't say, I've had enough with you, you're gone. Mac Jones isn't the starter. So am I, you know, if you think about what's going on, I mean, the offensive line, I mean, it's not great even with Tunsil on there. I'm actually okay with Davis Mills not being thrown out there. I think it's going to end up being just like Tyrod Taylor has the last couple of years. He's bridging a gap for somebody. I think Mills will be in at some point. But him not being in week one, I'm completely okay with.
Yeah, you make a good point with that. There is a fine balance between not throwing a kid to the wolves and getting him killed, but also, you know, if you, on the flip side, some other guys have started week one behind bad offensive lines like Joe Burrow, and it's the trial by fire, so to speak.
But also, that was also a first overall round pick.
Yeah, that is another point. I was going to get to that. Yeah, there was a different expectation for Burrow, but the point still remains about if you don't have a great line, then, you know, should you be a little bit more cautious in that? And I suppose the difference here could be that the Texans had the luxury of a veteran quarterback. And maybe the Bengals didn't. So I guess I can see that angle too. So I guess with all that in mind, we're just going to see how all this goes.
So moving on to the news that hit us today.
Well, which piece? I feel like getting the smaller news out of the way first, no pun intended, but I was thinking of the Amendola trade. Or the signing, I mean.
Yes.
Wow.
Danny Amendola. Now, I understand that we have a former Patriot guy as the GM, and we kind of knew that the Patriot moves were coming. It's just that when we saw the wide receiver depth on this team, we kind of said to ourselves, okay, there's plenty. And you gave away Randall Cobb for just a six-round pick. I know that they want their, you could argue, salary cap too, but essentially you gave Aaron Rodgers one of the biggest favors in his career.
It's true. Correct?
I mean, that he loved him as a player. He loved him in the locker room. He voiced it, said him by name, and you basically gave that guy a huge favor. So with that said and with that in mind, if we go towards Amendola to going as depth, I mean, he's not great, but what can he provide the younger guys? Is there any type of leadership he could bring to the table? Or do you think this is just a homer deal and it's not going to mean anything?
Well, Amendola over the course of his career has really struggled staying healthy. So,
agreed.
You know, if he can stay on the field, he still might be a somewhat effective slot receiver. And I certainly think he might be able to help some of these young guys. Maybe he's brought in to talk to Anthony Miller specifically, because that's a role I could kind of see Miller being effective in if he's given enough time with that. I feel like he was expected to do a little too much in Chicago, and the fact that Chicago's quarterback situation has been absolutely chaotic for a long time, I don't think did Miller any favors.
True.
So, I mean, just bringing in a veteran guy, cheap deal. I mean, low risk, some potential reward. Don't hate it. But, yeah, I'm not expecting anything huge out of Amendola this season.
Really?
Well, are you going to contest that?
No, I'm not at all. It wouldn't be smart for me to.
Alrighty then. So now moving on to the bigger and more interesting news today. Bradley Roby going to the Saints.
Yes.
Compensation, has it yet been revealed how much the
Texans are getting back? No, it's actually very funny too, because how many times do you see a NFL team trade a player for cash? This isn't baseball, this is football here. There's usually never a, we're trading him away for cash. But here's the deal and what I found out. Because of the suspension, his guaranteed time is basically gone. But what happens is, with this year alone, it saves $9.2 million in cap space, $1 million in dead cap this year, and the following year clears $10 million in cap. And I also believe that this year, Shaq Lawson saves him $7 million in cap. So I'm not sure what Caserio has planned, but one, I don't think this is the end of him trading away the house, because, again, it's not his problem, because these aren't his decisions that he's trying to make up for and hope they pan out. He's new, and he knows what he's getting into. He's choosing to bench Deshaun Watson. Why? He hasn't been on commissioner leave yet. He could start him this weekend if they wanted to, but right now they're not. He's going to be sitting on the bench this year, and they're going to be paying him just over $10.5 million. So do I see a tank job coming on? Yes. And I will say this, as much as I hate the process of it, you got to have guts to tank. You got hired in to strip all this down and to give a winning team. And sometimes the pain comes before the pleasure.
Yeah, it certainly does. It looks like Caserio is going back to square one and is going to build a team his way.
Clearly.
And the Patriot way hasn't worked too well outside of New England. I've seen the Browns try to do it, the Jets try to do it, and they both did not work.
They just failed at it. You're absolutely right.
I think some of it with those two teams was because the ownership didn't have the patience to do it. But yeah, this is year one of the deconstruction, and it seems like it may not be over until year two. The deconstruction part, that is. Reconstruction will take maybe another couple more.
So my concern is, right, we see the process now, and their goal is to have that first round pick, and I don't see any team that they would be fighting over it. This isn't like the Jets and the Jaguars last year fighting for that first round pick. I don't know who's that next team in line to do so.
Well, I don't see any other team out there clearly tanking, but I think the Lions could give us a run for our money for that top pick.
Yes. The only thing that gets me is that if you go with just the way that Dan Campbell speaks, he did not go there to lose. He's got that mentality where it comes across as you play to win the game, like Herman Edwards said it. And listen, that guy is just juiced up on too much coffee and adrenaline. I don't see that guy tanking. I think that's when maybe the ownership and the general manager probably don't agree with what the head coach is doing. But Detroit's been a mess for God knows how long now.
Well, quite a while. I think their last playoff appearance was 2016.
Pain.
Definitely. So, I mean, I agree with you that Campbell is there and he is enthusiastic and trying to win, but he is inheriting a very flawed roster, and his quarterback, which is a top 10 QB in the NFL, is gone. I mean, who knows? I don't know if this would be a major league situation where you get all these misfits that he could somehow fit together. But again, they're like in step one, square one, building up. Actually, now that you start laughing, you could truly sing Wild Thing about Dan Campbell. That dude is something else.
Yes. Not only that, but I mean, I could just imagine, you know, back to the Lions with Dan Campbell. Could you just imagine him just going? He doesn't have the voice, but could you just imagine going up to the office and just demanding stuff? One of my favorite lines, I can't get a goddamn whirlpool. You end up using a freaking boat motor in the tub. That's redneck.
Oh, man.
Boy. But
yes, it is interesting to think that they are starting at square one, and I'm not even sure the Texans are at square one yet.
Oh, boy.
Yes. But yes, cash considerations for a quality corner. Haven't seen that one. Don't think I will again.
All right. So just out of curiosity, I gotta go with this. We gotta talk about the matchup. And even though you think this is gonna be a doozy, it's changed right now. But it says here, right? It says right here that the favor is the Jags by 3 points.
Mm-hmm.
So I gotta tell you, man. Do you think this is fair? Do you think it's going to be a lot more than that?
I think it's going to be a rather competitive game from both sides.
For good or for worse?
Talking about from a perspective of someone watching the game or for someone betting?
I'm talking about just the game itself, really.
I actually think it'll be a competitive game, and I think we're going to really see a lot. We're getting our first look at sunshine in real time, and of course by sunshine I mean Trevor Lawrence. We gotta call that dude Sunshine, man.
I said it too. I did. So
you wanna... Actually, what's funnier? You want to tell you something funnier?
Oh boy. I gotta ask now.
All right, so I remember during the 2018 National Championship game, there was this one moment where the camera was on Trevor Lawrence. He'd taken off his helmet and he just flips his hair back like that. And I just tweeted out, he looks like Prince Charming from Shrek, and post a GIF of Prince Charming tossing his hair back and forth. And then the L'Oreal official account tweets back at me, wow, the accuracy on this.
Oh man, that's pretty good. I gotta say this though, man. Riddle me this. I'm actually looking at it here. It's under or over 45.5 for this game.
Under.
I definitely gotta go under, just simply because, right? The way that we bash this team, for better or for worse, or maybe it's because we just need to see more, okay? Let's just go off of this. How many points is this team going to score?
Well, I think they might score close to 20 points in this game, just looking at how good the running game looked in the preseason, and the fact the Jaguars have not been very good against the run in recent years, and I'm not sure that's going to be too much better, at least not this year.
Well, also, if you want to go that card, guess who also is not a great run defense?
Well, yeah, you got that too. Neither of these teams really slow down the run.
So I don't care if ETN was healthy. You're telling me James Robinson is suddenly going to fall off the planet? I'm not saying the man is Derrick Henry, but this guy is basically going to plow through us like 6 inches of snow on a New England day.
Well, I mean, I think we hadn't gotten quite that far in terms of breaking it down. I'm just saying I think Ingram and Lindsay are going to have some running room as well. Honestly, this could be a short game. This game could be over in 2 hours just because they're going to be handing the ball off all the time, hardly ever throwing the ball. Okay, that may be a slight exaggeration. But, yeah, I do expect quite a bit of running the ball. It might be an old-style game, a little bit low-scoring, 20-17 type of game. It could come down to whether Trevor Lawrence makes a big play or throws a bad interception. And I could kind of see either from how uneven he and the rest of the offense looked in the preseason. Daryl Bevel even said that he didn't think that offense had an identity. And you look at Urban Meyer, who's not been in the NFL very long at all, quarterback who has playing his first NFL game. I will take Lovie Smith, even with as flawed as this defense is, as much as they are lacking in talent, I still think that Smith could probably get the better of that combination. Maybe just enough to get to sneak this one out. So, I mean, I think that Taylor is probably going to be a good game manager, make a few throws here and there, probably not throw for more than 200 yards, maybe a little bit more. No more than 250. How about that? But really? Somewhere between 200 and 250, probably closer to 200, because I think run game will take first priority here. And, you know, it'll just come down, as so many games do, to just taking care of the ball. And, well, pretty much the bettors and most people have written the Texans off. You know, I actually think they might have an advantage in this one just because they have a more acclimated NFL type of coaching staff, and I think this time it could pay off. So I'm coming out here. I'm going to say the Texans win this game 20-17.
Ooh, interesting. Now, I've been weighing this a lot because if you've noticed, we got two rookie head coaches.
Yep.
A rookie quarterback and a first year in the system on this team quarterback. So a lot of variables and lots of first. But if we go by just, I mean, Urban Meyer's not, listen, do I think that he's great? Do I think he's going to get the job done to where they think he's going to, you know, go? Do I think that's going to be playoff bound like everybody says? No. Is the schedule easy for them and can they potentially make a run? Yes. But this game right here, David Culley's first game, and with everything going on, I gotta give this one to the Jags. I'm going, personally, I'm gonna go 24 to 13.
Another thing worth watching in this game could be the health of Kamini Fairbairn, Texans kicker who may not be playing in this game, and he's been a really good kicker for quite a while. If he can't go, yeah, that makes it a lot more iffy.
Wasn't he the best scorer for us last year?
I mean, the kicker is the leading scorer on most teams.
I know, but by a long shot. I mean, with a top five quarterback, you know what I mean? Not mocking
Right.
Fairburn, but still.
Yeah, you're not mocking him, you're mocking the rest of the team. I get it.
I'm mocking that statistic. It's just sad, unfortunately.
Pain.
Pain. So, we have a Johnny move. We have a move for cash, which is never done. And with all the salary cap that they're saving for potentially a first round pick next year, which, by the way, somebody said it this year, but the quarterback class that is going to be eligible. And we're going to see if we could get future Dr. Zach on, because just remember, this quarterback class that's eligible is not great. But if you are at a big school and you do not like the teams in front of you, like for instance, right? Let's say last year we take the Jags and the Jets, they're the top two. Technically speaking, right? And you could quote me on this or you could say however you like. If Trevor Lawrence didn't like either team, technically, with the endorsements he would have been making at Clemson, he could just simply said, "You know what, man? I'm opting to stay my senior year. I'm going to make my money and I'm going to go into the Bear draft." And believe it or not, if he actually did that, guess what? You'd be seeing him in Battle Creek Blue and Battle Red. Ouch, right?
Tis true, although the NIL laws hadn't come into effect whenever he declared for the draft, so he did
I'm
not
just
know that part yet.
I get you, but I'm just saying, if he gambled it, right? Nowadays it's going to change. I'm not sure if that means anything for a guy, let's say like a Spencer Rattler, who is part of the Heisman winning. I'm not sure if it's your next Bama quarterback. I'm not sure who it is, but just remember, it's going to be very tough for a lot of these teams, and this is what's going to eliminate tanking to a point. Because you are not going to tank for a junior quarterback who is just going to go, "Eh, I'm staying for senior year. I'm going to get paid anyways." I understand that the pay is a much different, but if you want longevity for a career, the dollars, everything else, chances are you don't go to a failing program.
Right, but the problem comes in. You most likely are going to have another not well run NFL franchise the next year at the top of the draft, too. Now, there are some exceptions, like, back when Eli Manning was going to be, well, he was the top pick at that point. But, the Giants had been in the Super Bowl in 2000, and then he was being picked in 2004. Although, yeah, I do realize that the Chargers drafted him and then the Giants traded for him. But the point here is the Giants were picking in the top five because, timing just worked out that way that things had run their course and they needed a quarterback.
But the
So.
other side of the coin, if you are a dumpster fire organization such as the Jets, such as the Jaguars until proven otherwise, guess what? If you have that high draft pick again, you're not picking a quarterback in the top five again.
Okay, I'm not really sure where this is going. My point is, if you have this junior quarterback who's going to say that he stays his senior year, all right, you could avoid one bad organization, but you're probably going to end up on another. So
Yes, but the thing is, you pick and choose those, Because what happens is, right, if the Jets got the number two overall pick, if they suck so bad that they're going to be in the top five again, which I think they will be, guess what? You can eliminate the Jets from drafting you. You pick your poison, and you got to weigh things out. That's two teams that never had a good reputation. You eliminate those two off the board, and you gamble on next year. It's a big thought process, but I think somebody's going to do it. Who that guy is,
it could happen.
I think it will. I think we're not ready to talk about that discussion, but I think it's inevitable.
Yeah, someone might try it, but it may not work out well for them. That's all I'm saying.
Pleasure.
And I think what I talked about could dissuade some guys from doing it. It's like, well, I could go into the NFL now and get more money, and also I would know that I was in the NFL on a rookie contract, so I don't risk blowing out my knee my senior year and never being back at the level I once was at. So, I mean, it's a very complex phenomenon. I think we can agree on that. You are right that it adds another layer to it, but at the same time, I don't think it eliminates all the things that would encourage going out in the draft early.
Complicated process. But I will say this. Do you think that they're going to draft the quarterback if they do get a high pick, or what's the case?
Yeah, I'm fairly sure the Texans would end up spending a high pick on a QB. You mentioned Spencer Rattler, and another guy to look out for is Matt Corral from Ole Miss. He's been high on a lot of draft boards, and I don't know if the Rebels make a deep run this year. Deep run. I don't know, make a six, have a really good season, win 9-10 games. Yeah, how about that? He's probably going to cement his status as a top three pick.
I mean, if we're going by the top picks in this draft class, like if you go up to the this is Josh Edwards from CBS Sports. The 2022 NFL Draft Top 50 Prospects. The first one is, I shouldn't know how to pronounce this, Kayvon, I'm sorry, I'm going to butcher this, Trebotics, edge rusher from Oregon. I mean, that is a very high in demand for the team. But then as far as the quarterbacks go in this non-quarterback heavy draft, Spencer Rattler, Sam Howell, and Tyler Linderbaum lead the class. Carson Strong from Nevada. I mean, then we got a Keaton Slavis from USC. And USC hasn't produced a consistent quarterback since when? Carson Palmer?
Yeah.
Fair to say. But when you think of those names, right, it's no disrespect to these guys, but I just don't see the bread and butter. I just don't see tanking for a quarterback that you do not trust. This has nothing to do with David Mills being picked up. Some people thought he'd go earlier. Some people thought he's eh. But take that out of consideration. My thought is this. If you – where if you call it tanking, where if you're just going, I like my guys and test to see what we are for this year. If you're going to take the number one overall pick, it doesn't always have to be a quarterback, particularly if you don't think he's going to be very good. The way that this team has needs, do you take the best available? The best prospect in the draft?
Well, it would kind of depend, I suppose. You don't know if there's going to be a quarterback up there that some team falls in love with, and then you'd want to trade down and collect other picks.
Oh,
that
trade,
should be something you can
is,
do.
Trading down, I totally get that, and I think Caserio will be concerned about what it would be trading down. I mean, he's collected all these draft picks already. It makes sense if he had the number one overall pick. I mean, it might happen to something like the Bears, where they trade through the roof or just to move over one spot. The first
Right.
overall pick in the draft, if you got any stud you want. And I think that pick
True.
is going to be valuable. Now, I don't think it's going to be as valuable as picks in the past because, we just had the best prospect since Andrew Luck, and that type of prospect only happens once every decade.
Right.
So that said, I don't think it'll be as much as people think, but I think it'll be two first round picks and a second, dependent on where that team lies. Like if you're 10th, I think it might be two first rounds, a second, a third. Depends on who you want and how badly you need him, and of course the position. But I
Yep.
can actually see this team trading down and taking the best available. Or me personally, I'm going edge rusher or offensive line.
Those are certainly possible. It's just going to depend on if you have any quarterback in the class that you think is your guy.
Very
And
true.
we'll really not know any of that until spring, I think.
Very true. Although this my guy, quote unquote, my guy thing is something that I'm absolutely, absolutely sick of. Can I tell you why?
Well, I know you've talked about it before. Whenever you have a new coach, new guy come in, you get their guy to replace some other young guy. But the
It goes.
Texans aren't in that situation. They
It
got a
goes
stopgap
into more
guy,
than that.
and then Mills, who just we don't think he was presumed to be the future there. So this is not a Josh Rosen situation where Kyler Murray came in and they shipped Rosen out for a bag of chips, although they may have still gotten the better end of that trade.
Mean, the fact that you draft him, the fact that you draft him next year when he plays what, eight games, and you get like, didn't they get just a third round for him?
Third or a second, I can't remember.
I think it was a third round. I think they skipped the second round. I could be wrong. It was either a late second or an early third round, but still, bust.
I mean, ultimately for the Cardinals, getting Murray seems to have panned out so far, but
Oh,
still, the
absolutely.
concept of it is your point, and just shipping out a young dude just because he isn't the guy you want seems stupid. Okay, scenario where this didn't work was whenever Josh McDaniels went to the Broncos and he wanted Matt Castle and wanted to ship Jay Cutler out of town. Eventually he did, but he ended up with Kyle Orton instead. I mean, Kyle Orton was a decent starter, but he was not what people would call a franchise quarterback. I'll just leave it at that.
The thing is that just goes into it is when it goes to my guy, it went more than just, getting my quarterback. You see, the problem being is that in the 21st century so far, up until just recently, it was always these organizations that are just saying, I don't want to have an experienced head coach. I want to find my guy. I want to make sure that he's got my name on it. Okay, whatever. And then it's like, okay, I want my quarterback. And then it seems to be one or the other. And this goes on for years. And you have the dominant teams that just keep stomping all over you. There's a reason why the Vikings are only good once every decade. And that's because if you look at the Packers, yeah, they've treated their quarterback like garbage the last 2 years. But if you look at the system they've had in place, they've been doing it right. There's some of these quarterbacks and some of these head coaches that can't get on the same page. And if you look at some teams that are trying to get this process in order and being like, oh, I need my guy, I need this. It's like, hey, you want coffee and cab fare too? Like, what the hell else you want? These teams that had everything in place were being good and staying better than everybody else, and everybody else was still just twiddling their thumbs trying to figure it out. And some of them took 5 years. And you got some teams that had one lucky year, but still wasn't good enough. Like, if you think that your best time was having 9 wins in a single 5-year span, guess what? That's not great. That means you were over 500 for 1 year out of 5. All your draft picks are gone, or in some of them are let go, some are re-signed, and you have to start all over from the bare bones again. And there's still some people in the 21st century that are still doing it. Look at the Raiders.
Yep. Reminds me of one quote from Bill Parcells back when he was the head coach of the Cowboys. He said, "There are teams out there that think they can dial a 1-800 number and get a quarterback. I know teams been trying to dial that for years." Of course, the irony of that is that Quincy Carter was the starting quarterback he inherited, so he might have wanted to dial that number. Well, eventually he got Romo, I think. Unfortunately, it was the right at the end whenever he basically told Jerry, either it's T.O. or me, I'm not going to coach that guy anymore. But Jerry married T.O. and Parcells was out. I know this is not an NFL podcast, but making fun of the Cowboys, I will still do it.
Well, I mean, technically, this is a Houston Texans, flagship, so we can make fun of the Cowboys all we want. But if you just think about it, right, the fact that some of these old-school general managers, you know, the same kind of guys that are still trying to rave about the 1970s-era Pittsburgh Steelers, the same type of guy, you know, the same guys that are like, just win! Okay, is that why you draft like shit and you don't sign anybody that's worth a damn? Yeah, okay, just win. Right. The fact that you're trying to go to the yellow pages, which, by the way, it's 2021. That's not happening anymore. I'm not even sure if they still make phone books. But the fact that you're trying to call 1-800-I-NEED-A-QB, it's terrible.
I mean, ultimately, you have these teams that are just beginning with no end in mind. They have no commitment to seeing out the process of building a team. A lot of GMs are just making moves on knee-jerk reactions to save their jobs. And I really hope at this point that if they brought Caserio in, that he'll stay and actually have a chance to execute his vision to perfection instead of just leaving a half-baked job that another person has to go in, wipe away, and start again. I certainly see your point with all this.
I mean, right now the quarterback situation's been sketchy, and the fact that they haven't even commented about it. I mean, these guys can't even commit to a parking spot right now.
Well, again, we're not even at square one of this rebuild. So
true.
Let's just buckle up. Hopefully we can get a win on Sunday, because there may not be too many of them this year.
I agree, and the under and over right now on my bookie is under over 4.
I was looking at the schedule this week. I was thinking 3-14. Maybe if Carson Wentz is out for one of the games against the Colts, we could pull an upset on them. I'm not saying how likely that would be, but I suppose it would be possible.
So no Ty Hilton and no Wentz for a game? I think it's possible. And yes, we haven't seen enough of Jacob Eason to comment.
Correct.
So, logically speaking, I actually have 2-14.
You mean 2-15?
2-15, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think get a split with the Jaguars, and I think week one is a more likely victory than going to Jacksonville in December, because we can take advantage of the inexperience that the Jags are going to have coming out in week one. I also think we'll beat the Jets later in the year at home, and maybe we could pull another upset somewhere along the way. Maybe Carolina in week three, if Darnold Donut starts seeing ghosts. Maybe.
If you go by just quarterback play, I mean, it's all, if you want to just go by the quarterback, it's kind of like playing war with a deck of cards. It's a lot easier that way.
Perhaps.
At that point, you could probably have 5 or 6 wins, but that seems very high for a lot of people. And the fact that there's some guys that are having suicide pools for fantasy football, The fact that they said you could only go against the Texans a maximum of four times. I don't remember that rule being in place before.
Right.
Ouch.
I'm still going to stick with three victories. Jack,
right, I'll stick with two.
Another upset somewhere along the way. And, you know, split with the Colts if circumstances permit.
And you think
such
that
a rosy outlook.
And you think they're going to win this Sunday?
I do.
Okay, so we got this week, one against the Colts.
Maybe.
Just that, just any time in the season?
Well, a win against the Colts, if you have the Carson Wentz out and some of that, I could see it as possible. The Jets, and then some other upset somewhere.
Carolina?
Potentially Carolina. Okay, I even could see the Dolphins because I'm still not sold on that team. I never was a huge Tua guy, and you don't know exactly what you're going to get. Are the Dolphins more talented? Yes, but you have to think about this too. The Dolphins were number one in the NFL last year in turnover, and defenses that are highly dependent on turnovers usually don't repeat that same success in the next season. So I really do think the Dolphins are going to be a flop this year. I could see them going 7-10, something like that. I don't buy them as a playoff team. And, you know,
that's an exceptional take.
It's a potential upset. I could bring up the fact that the Texans are 8-1, I think, all time against the Dolphins. Not that those really have anything to do with this year's teams, but it is what it is.
All right. Any closing remarks, Tex?
Nope. I think I've said all that I need to say for this week.
All right. I guess take it out.
All right. So there you have it. We've definitely been looking forward to week one. Can't wait to see how this one goes, getting our first look at this 2021 squad. Please remember to check us out on Twitter at Texans Talk Pod. And be on the lookout for our new YouTube channel. Once that gets up, we'll post about it on Twitter. And we'll be back to discuss everything about week one with you next week. So therefore, on behalf of AJ Torres, I'm Josh McSwain. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.